something and you're asking something from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So before you go ask from this and that, you start a fasting. Just fast next day and say, oh Allah, I want this and I need this and I want this and that and I need this and that. And for that, I just want to fast. And then you fast. So, or as I said, it's highly recommended every moment fast at least 3 days in each month. So through the year, you always fast minimum 3 days or maybe 4, 5, 10, 20 days, whatever you want. So when you associate yourself with the action of fasting, you become part of Sa'imin, the one who always live with fasting. And that's a beautiful thing. And this is the Rasulullah is trying to say, Inna Allah Ta'ala wakkala malaikatahu bidu'a lil salimin. Allah has appointed angels who are going to fast. Do dua for us, inshallah ta'ala. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad wa salamu alaykum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Sheikh Ammar in the program Hadith of the Day on RIB English Radio.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin وآل محمد. اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد.
Doing us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. Now, the U.S.-Israeli Holocaust on Palestinians in Gaza has reached its 164th day. The regime continues to up the ante in trying to see how much more misery it can cause the Palestinians. Besides the sniping and bombing of people and structures, starvation is another weapon of choice by the Zionists that is increasingly claiming more victims. Newborns are the first to succumb to starvation, and then other infants and kids. The world is watching the systematic genocide of Gazans as more political leaders give some verbal condemnation but take no action. This while Palestinian kids ask, why is it a crime to be Palestinian in this world? But I'd like to welcome my guests to this program. Amal Wahdan, human rights activist out of Ramallah. And Ali Salam, editor-in-chief of Asir Press, out of Tehran. Well, thank you both for being with me. I'm going to start this off in Ramallah and Amman. The regime can kill tens of thousands of people in real time. It can destroy all infrastructure. It can prevent food and supplies from entering Gaza and starve the population to death. Now, the regime can kill patients in hospitals and destroy those structures. Are there any red lines for the regime on what it cannot do against Palestinians?
Actually, it's not only this regime that is waging this war against the Palestinians. If it was only this regime, that would be a different story. But this regime is backed up by the U.S., regardless of the U.S. Rhetoric about, human devastations and crises and all of, public statements that Biden comes up with or his spokesperson. If this regime wasn't backed by the U.S. in particular and the rest of the Western world, it wouldn't last, because we've seen that we're entering the 6th month and the regime is torn apart when we are talking about military performance, security, economic, all of this actually is affecting the Israelis. And we daily read reports by Israeli strategists about the endless war, about a no strategy war. So all that means that this regime is not carrying this war by itself. The U.S. is complicit in it, and the rest of the Western world. Unfortunately, the Arab and Islamic world has done almost zero in terms of this crisis. If we put aside the axis of resistance, of course, and some of the Islamic countries, but the majority of the Arab countries, especially the Gulf countries, the rest of the Islamic world hasn't budged much to come forward to put an end to this crisis. I think it is actually tied up with more, let's say, geopolitical strategy run by the U.S.
Okay, I will get back to you on that. Interesting point that you're making. Well, Ali, when we look at the situation that is happening, as we just heard, almost 6 months in the making now, is there any way possible this type of carnage would have been allowed to take place against Europeans?
Absolutely not. As we can see, the world reaction to something like the Russian special military operation in Ukraine, which came as a result of 8 years of shelling constantly on an almost daily basis of the various cities and regions in the Donbas area, Lugansk and Donetsk. And the moment Russia decides to defend these people who are a majority ethnic and ethnic speaking Russians, they come in and look what happened. They became the most sanctioned country in the world, even to the point of surpassing Iran in number of sanctions. The media vilified them, and then to the point of even erasing Russian culture like Dostoevsky or Tchaikovsky or all these other significant figures in Russian culture and arts. None of this has been done to the Zionist regime, there is not really an existent Israeli culture. Hummus is not Israeli. These types of things are not Israeli. So they don't really have so much of a culture that we can blockade from the minds of the people. But exposing the truth about Zionism and its global network in various different spheres of the world gets you banned off of Twitter, gets you banned off of Facebook, gets you banned off of Meta. Those are the same thing. So the mainstream media is, you know, not talking about this. It just goes to show who is in control of the major centers of power in the world. And it's these who are having the blood of all these people directly on their hands. These are the criminals. But because they control the media, they can flip the script and they can ignore their own crimes and be able to cover up their own crimes as a kind of sort of a pair as a hand in hand with the military crimes is the media to help cover up their complicity.
Okay. Well, Amal, who's responsible to prevent starvation from being used as a weapon of war? We seem to have quite a dilemma because on the one hand, you alluded to the Western hegemonic front actually being responsible for this in general. And then on the other hand, that same Western hegemonic front is the front that is actually supposed to be controlling or helping enforce international law. So answer that question. I mean, who's supposed to be responsible for this? Who's supposed to be preventing this from happening?
Actually, in the current world that we are living in, the UN should be the first or international organization to put an end to this. But who's controlling the UN? As we have seen, as we have witnessed through the three past decades, all these wars that the Middle East was subjected to by the USA and the Western its Western allies, the UN did not do anything. And as for the Palestinians in Gaza, the UN and UNRWA should be responsible in you know, work and relief agency. The UNRWA is for the work and relief for the Palestinians, but it cannot do its work. Actually, it has been prevented from doing its work. Its employees have been targeted. We lost a number, dozens of employees of the UNRWA. And at the end, the Israelis were pointing fingers to criminalize some of the employees of the UNRWA. So the international organizations cannot do much for us. And the Western world, you have seen the double standard when it comes to Ukraine. They acted in a different way. But when it comes to the Palestinians, when it comes to the Israeli regime, they act in a different way. From one hand, they want also to protect their military base here, their stronghold in this area. And from the other hand, there is, as I was trying to say, there is a strategy behind all this. And we've seen what happened during the 12 years of what they called the Arab Spring in different parts of the Middle East, different Arab countries. And all of that was because of the gas. They wanted to establish a route for natural gas parallel to that of Nord Stream 1 and Nord Stream 2. And now I think it's the same thing happening again. Remember that they have started this route from United Arab Emirates through the Saudi Arabia, Jordan, to help the Israelis, because the Israelis has been suffering. They don't have any exports. They don't have any, the settlements are not providing products for the Israeli economy. So the economy is paralyzed at the moment. But hey, where United Arab Emirates jumped in there and opened a route to help the Israelis. But this route now is planned to get a parallel route to the gas, the Russian gas, the Nord Stream 1 and Nord Stream 2, and to encounter the Belt and the Road initiative, the Chinese Belt and the Road, which achieved a lot during the past 15 years. So we are encountering now another hegemonic attack by the U.S. to seize the natural gas off the shores of Gaza. The Itamar field, gas field, which is controlled by the Israelis, belongs to the Gaza Strip, belongs to the Palestinians. Now they want a route comes from India through United Arab Emirates, Saudi Arabia, up to the Mediterranean.
Okay.
Now, this brings the global, the global powers into a new confrontation. I think President Putin mentioned that we are about to enter World War III if the Western world continues to provide Ukraine with weapons. Now, he's gonna, I mean, maybe they come short of explaining the other threat for World War III, which is the current American hegemony. They are trying to build a floating pier on the coastline of Gaza shores. That means the Americans are trying to occupy directly.
Okay.
I'm not saying indirectly. They are trying to occupy Gaza and at the same time protecting the Israeli regime from collapsing.
Well, okay, let me get Ali back in on this. Ali, you heard what Amal is saying. One, talking about the Western hegemonic front, also then talking about various Muslim countries or Arab countries working along, it appears, with these Western hegemonic entities. Your take on that, and if it's so, why is that the case? What are these Arab regimes trying to get when their Arab brethren, their Muslim brothers, are being slaughtered in front of their eyes?
These regimes are only outwardly Muslim, but every human being is designed to worship. Worship what? That's up to the human being. These people, they worship money. They worship wealth and material. You see the way they live, and they live all these lavish lifestyles. Honestly, it puts their economies as a house of cards, especially during the coronavirus when there was a simultaneous oil price war that drove the price of oil down. their economies took a big hit because they live in this fantasy world, and I think that all importing material goods, Ferraris and everything like that, they're only interested in money and power. They don't care about other Muslims because the Muslim is just a name for them. They don't care about their other Arab brethren because to them they think that they're above the rest of humanity, and there's a doubt if they about the nature of their ethnicity among some academic circles. But they're not going to care because they're only interested in maintaining their power. And that's why some may have pivoted towards Iran, for example, because they feel that the U.S. will get rid of them if they get a little bit too ahead of themselves, like as what the U.S. did to Saddam, for example. And they have been actually trying to do to Mohammed bin Salman because they see him as too ambitious, and that his stunts can potentially destabilize the Saudi regime, and they would replace him with somebody that's potentially more of a stabilizer than him. But they're all complicit in normalizing with the Zionist regime, and they don't care about the Palestinians at all. So this is just part of the game that they're playing, and they're going to essentially coronate it through an establishment of another puppet regime in Palestine. And all the maneuvers that we've been seeing with the Palestinian Authority, with President Biden and Senator Chuck Schumer saying that Netanyahu needs to go, and many statements against the resistance by some comprador classes within the Palestinian political blocs, they're all essentially preparing to create a comprador regime to govern over all of Palestine, including Gaza, to basically snuff out the resistance and get rid of the last remaining form of independent government that exists among the Palestinians, which is the Hamas government.
Okay.
And replace it with something similar to the Zionist-controlled Palestinian Authority. And the Gulf states will be the rubber stamp for this because they'll promise all the money and the aid and the reconstruction as long as Palestinians are humiliated just like they are humiliated and follow the same agenda of being essentially second-class puppets of the Zionists and the Americans.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Amal, Al-Shifa Hospital, the largest medical facility in Gaza, was hit again by the Israeli regime on Sunday. It's the fourth time the facility has been targeted. There are thousands of people taking shelter in the hospital complex. Now, more Palestinians, of course, were killed yesterday and wounded who were taking refuge inside of the complex. Your thoughts on why the Israeli regime, the U.S.-backed Israeli regime, continues to attack and destroy hospitals and kidnap hospital staff? I mean, what is their goal specifically in dealing with medical facilities in the way they are?
You know, when they are committing mass genocide against the Palestinians, targeting, airstrikes, bombardment from the sea and land tanks, they are using every method of lethal weapon to exterminate the Palestinians. And the hospitals for them were targeted from, the first week of the ground invasion. They don't want to leave any facility, any health facility that can provide health services, that can, rescue the wounded from dying. So the facility, the hospitals and the health facilities for them is another target, another lethal weapon that they can use to exterminate the Palestinians. I mean, all what we are seeing on TV screens is, it's a show of a continuous, deliberate killing. I can't describe it in more specific words, except they have surpassed the Nazis during World War II. And when we see the children and the women, the helpless children and women under the rubble and, even the cemeteries, they were excavating the cemeteries. I mean, all kinds, all sorts of crimes, especially the hospitals, as we've been seeing, saying. So these institutions, whether it's the health, whether it's the education, whether it's, the churches, the mosques, the buildings, 80% of Gaza has been demolished, has been destructed under the eyes of the whole world. And I have to say, if we don't have the axis of resistance, it would be really hard for the Palestinian resistance to continue this fight. And thanks God that we have the resistance in South Lebanon, in Yemen, in Iraq, in Syria, and of course the Islamic Republic of Iran. Other than that, I'm afraid that even Russia and China are only playing a diplomatic role rather than exerting more pressure on the U.S.
Okay.
I mean, I'm sure that they have other, weak points that they can pressure the U.S. At least to at least to accept a ceasefire. The Americans do not accept a long-term ceasefire. They only asking for short-term ceasefire. So, from this, you can come to a conclusion that the U.S. really wants Gaza to be unlivable place, and the Israelis already have put plans to reoccupy Gaza. And to add to is the floating pier on the coastline. That's what they are trying to do, to reoccupy Gaza. But I don't think they will succeed, because the Israelis are facing internal problems that prevent them from reaching the victory that they are seeking to.
Well, EU Foreign Policy Chief Joseph Borrell says Israel's genocide in Gaza has now turned the territory into the world's biggest open-air graveyard, whereas before it was the world's biggest open-air prison. Your thoughts on his comments? Because representing the EU, one would think that if he felt like that before, that perhaps he should have done something when it was the world's biggest open-air prison, but we didn't see any action coming from the EU. Your thoughts?
We didn't see any action then, and we're not going to see any action now. These statements are empty, and they're an insult to the ocean of blood that has been spilled, which has been assisted by EU member states. In fact, most of them are assisting in this genocide in one way or another. Italy, France, England, although I believe England exited the EU, but is still an ally nonetheless. This is just the nature of the EU and the UN. It's just to issue toothless statements that don't mean anything. As His Eminence Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah, the Secretary General of Hezbollah, said many, many years ago, that the UN and these types of international organizations will condemn both the killer and the victim. So we should also look at their statements about the resistance. And as I mentioned before, the slanderous statements against the resistance by certain comprador factions among Palestinian political blocs are essentially blaming the resistance for the genocide of Gaza, as if Israel hasn't been doing these types of measures beforehand and wouldn't have done these types of things maybe over a longer period of time, but would have done them anyways. Their goal was to eventually get rid of Gaza entirely, and they would have done it without any pretext. And they had attacked Gaza long before Hamas even existed in 2005 or established the government in 2006.
All right, let me get Ahmad back in on this because I want to look at the geopolitical significance of all this that Ahmad, you had alluded to earlier. Let's talk about what we're seeing in Gaza and the moves by which entities, which parties, and what does it mean in your perspective from a geopolitical level?
Sorry, I didn't get that.
I want the geopolitical significance you had alluded to earlier about what is happening in Gaza. Your take on that, please.
Right. But before this, 7 October, I think it was a preemptive action by the resistance, by the Palestinian resistance and by Al-Qassam brigades in particular, because the Israelis were planning this. And if you remember, Netanyahu, in his way of, being a comedian, he was showing a map in his speech in front of the UN General Assembly, and he was showing a map with an alternative route starts from India across United Arab Emirates. And, hey, United Arab Emirates in all, conspiracies here, and its presence is unprecedented by any other country, as if it was planned to play this role. So it starts from India to United Arab Emirates, Saudi Arabia, Jordan, and then through it was meant to be the Israeli port, but now it's coming from Gaza to Cyprus, to Europe. And this plan was meant to encounter the Nord Stream 1 and Nord Stream 2, the Russian gas. And that's why I think President Putin has warned against a possible of eruption of World War III, based on what's happening on Ukraine, and now to add to it what's going on in Gaza and the scale of the attack, of the aggression, is also unprecedented. It's it's like World War III that we are living in Gaza area, in at 365 square kilometers, and with 2.3 million people being squeezed in, siege, blockaded for 17 years, and now exterminated. So this whole thing makes a sense that the geopolitical strategy for the U.S.
So sorry to interrupt you, Ahmad, but we are out of time. I appreciate both of you being with me, Ahmad Wahdan, human rights activist out of Ramallah, and Ali Salam, editor-in-chief, Basir Press out of Tehran. And thank you for being with us on another Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashmi signing out for myself and other group right here in Tehran.
Insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu Alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, Insights into the Holy Quran, by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hausa Seminary of Qom. Please stay with us.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Hello everyone, brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Madarsi with you with another edition of Insights into the Holy Quran. In this edition of the program, we'll discuss some of the contents of Chapter Naml, the 27th chapter of the Holy Quran, as well as some of the commentary points of the verses. Brothers and sisters, let's listen to the 14th verse of Surah An-Naml.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim.
In the name of Allah, the entirely merciful, the especially merciful.
وَجَحَدُوا بِهَا وَاسْتَيْقَنَتْهَا أَنفُسُهُمْ ظُلْمًا وَعُلُوًّا فَانْظُرْ كَيْفَ كَانَ عَاقِبَةُ الْمُفْسِدِينَ
And they rejected them, while their inner selves were convinced thereof, out of injustice and haughtiness. So see how was the end of the corruptors.
In the previous episodes, brothers and sisters, we mentioned that the story of Prophet Moses ala nabiyyina wa alihi wa alayhi salam is started in this chapter as the first one to be mentioned. So, in his story, he was equipped with one powerful magic, or better say, when it actually disables people who want to believe, this is what we call a miracle. This is not magic. So anyway, he is provided with his first kind of miracle from the side of the Almighty Allah, because it is granted from his side and the absolute cause, as the one which is turning the rod into the serpent. We said also that this miracle can be accounted as two, but since the Holy Quran counts it as only one, we will also do the same. Anyway, the Holy Quran says, we are providing Prophet Moses ala nabiyyina wa alayhi salam with different kinds of powers, potentialities, and miracles. Why? Because he is about to face some headstrong, selfless, self-superior people who are the people of Pharaoh. Pharaoh and his people as well. They were two different things. Now, anyway, we will move on with the story of Prophet Moses, but the point is that first he needed all his powers, all his potentialities to go against these people because they were at their utmost transgression, as the Holy Quran says. And the second point is that the transgression is the origin of their actually standing against Moses. But why did they stand against Moses? As the Holy Quran says, their hearts wanted to acknowledge the truth. وَاسْتَيْقَنَتْهَا أَنفُسُهُمْ They knew what the truth was, but why did they not want to believe in it? ظُلْمًا وَعُلُوًّا The Holy Quran stated in the 14th verse, as you just listened in the beginning of this episode. وَجَحَدُوا بِهَا وَاسْتَيْقَنَتْهَا أَنفُسُهُمْ ظُلْمًا وَعُلُوًّا So, the important point, the most important thing is that ظُلْم and عُلُوّ, injustice and self-superiority, are the main two original things that cause actually headstrongness, that cause being misled and transgression. So the Holy Quran is structuring all the story of these people standing against their prophet, Prophet Moses, upon two important things, ظُلْمًا وَعُلُوًّا. And the Holy Quran says, if you do not know what happens to people who are having these two characteristics, فَانْظُرْ كَيْفَ كَانَ عَاقِبَةُ الْمُفْسِدِينَ See how the end of mischief makers was.
We hope and pray that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blesses us with the ability to cover more of His divine
In this
word.
Series of programs, we will inshallah discuss the Holy Quran with a thematic approach.
We will inshallah discuss the chapter.
وتمثل القرآن في أخلاقه وفعاله فيه الفؤاد تعلقا وتلاه في جنح الدجى متدبرا.
The context in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala speaks in this verse is the context of mentioning the ills and problems and evils of the people of the book, the previous nations who have received revelation, and more particularly the Jew.
Now let's listen to some of the verses of the Holy Quran.
First, let's listen to a few verses.
Now let's listen to some verses of the Holy Quran.
Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hausa Seminary of Qom.
So as we said, in this 14th verse, two important characteristics of those people is mentioned. وَجَحَدُوا بِهَا They denied it. وَاسْتَيْقَنَتْهَا أَنفُسُهُمْ Although they acknowledged through their hearts, ظُلْمًا وَعُلُوًا out of injustice and self-superiority. This is really important, that the reason why they denied prophethood is this, self-superiority and injustice. So, as we said, it is pretty much interesting that the Holy Quran considers the motivation of the denial of the people of Pharaoh in two things, this injustice and pride. So, their injustice may refer to the destroying of others' rights, usurpation of the rights of other people. And their pride might refer to their self-superiority over the children of Israel. It means that they saw if they surrendered to the signs and miracles of Moses, they both would find their unlawful interests in danger, and that they would stand in the same row with their slaves, the children of Israel, and none of them were tolerable for them. Or it is also probable that the purpose of the Quranic word unjustly, ظُلْمًا وَعُلُوَّ, it is the kind of injustice they did to themselves, or to the divine verses, with their denial. Also, the purpose of the word proudly could be the oppression over others, as other verses of the Holy Quran suggest. However, at the end of this verse, a lesson is mentioned. With a very short and expressive sentence, the Holy Quran points to the evil end of people of Pharaoh, and the fact that they were drowned and destructed. So it says, فَانْظُرْ كَيْفَ كَانَ عَاقِبَةُ الْمُفْسِدِينَ And consider, how was the end of mischief makers? The Quran does not uncover the matter here, because they had read the painful story of this disbelieving people in other verses of the Holy Quran and in other chapters, but it mentions the fact that these two were the origination of their denial. By the way, for among their ugly qualities entirely, the Holy Quran has emphasized on mischief making, and this is a very comprehensive concept which we will not discuss more in this episode. Thank you for staying with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. This life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parsetoday.ir. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
Things always worked for me. Worry ends when faith begins.
Life is full of choices. Choose the best option. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Poreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
The people of Afghanistan are facing immense hardship and sorrow, with the country finding itself at the bottom of the World Happiness Report rankings. The report, which evaluates nations based on various factors such as freedom, health, and income, has named Afghanistan as the unhappiest, where almost everyone is very unhappy.
Everyone here agrees with the result of the World Happiness Survey. We are unhappiest, and that is because of the ongoing poverty, unemployment, and lack of freedom and opportunities. Furthermore, girls cannot receive education, which further adds to the misery of Afghan families. When women are despaired, families feel unhappy.
I have been unemployed for almost 3 years. Since then, I have not had any income. My young daughters are missing their school, and this situation is so tough. How can we be happy? The Afghan people have suffered decades of intervention and war, and they have not been happy. But experts say, under the rule of the Taliban, their circumstances have worsened.
The Afghan people have suffered decades of intervention and war, and they have not been happy. But experts say, under the rule of the Taliban, their circumstances have worsened.
As we speak, mental clinics across Kabul are receiving more patients than ever. As a psychologist, I witnessed the rise of mental health problems such as anxiety, stress, and depression. They have even led to suicide. If you take hope away from people, it will result in a depressed and dead nation. Hope is everything for human beings. If it is eroded, all progress will be lost.
The Afghan people are resilient, but the absence of basic human necessities and rights can crush even the strongest will. The international community and the ruling Taliban share a responsibility to bring some hope and light to the life of the crisis-stricken nation. Decades of foreign interventions and war have made Afghans the poorest and the saddest people on the planet. This nation has long yearned for peace and happiness, but it remains to be seen when or whether they find their lost dream. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
The appointment of a new Palestinian prime minister at the current circumstances can deepen divisions as the Israeli war on Gaza rages. This is what some Palestinian factions revealed after President Mahmoud Abbas appointed Mohammed Mustafa, a long-trusted advisor on economic affairs, as prime minister and tasked him with forming a new government. Both Hamas and resistance movements, the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, and the Palestinian National Initiative said that without national consensus, it's a reinforcement of a policy of exclusion and the deepening of division. We met Dr. Mustafa Al-Barghouti, Secretary General of the National Initiative. He told us that the most important thing is now a unified leadership.
We're not against the new government. We're against the way the government is being formed. We want a national consensus government, a government which is acceptable and accepted by all Palestinian political groups through a national dialogue between the different groups. And that is natural because, and for us, the main goal first before forming a government is how we structure a unified Palestinian national leadership.
Mohammed Mustafa replaces Mohammed Shtayyi, who resigned less than 3 weeks ago, citing the need for real change. Experts, however, say there had been mounting pressure on Abbas to reform the Palestinian Authority and initiate the establishment of a political framework capable of governing a future Palestinian state to take charge of all Palestinian territories after the Israeli genocidal war on Gaza ends.
First of all, that there was a pressure on the Palestinian Authority to make some changes, and that's why they complied immediately and appointing Mohammed Mustafa as the new prime minister. This is on the one hand. On the other hand, which is most importantly as well, what the Palestinians wanted. The Palestinians don't want another government to be the same. The problem here is with Israel. Are they, and the international community, are they able to really make the change and let this government to work or not?
The new prime minister now would work to form a technocratic government of experts. Abbas has also asked Mustafa to create plans to reunite the administration of the West Bank and Gaza Strip, reform the government, and address internal corruption.
A real political change, not a change in words only, is what the people here desire. Moreover, the upcoming government faces numerous challenges, namely rebuilding the Gaza Strip, torpedoing Israeli plans to control the coastal enclave, and managing Palestinians' lives. Mona Kandil, Occupy Jamallah.
On Saturday, thousands of people joined a new rally in the Italian capital, organized, among the others, by the movement of the Palestinian students and the Association of the Palestinians in Italy. The initiative, dubbed Stop the Genocide, also saw the participation of high school students and families. People at the rally strongly condemned Italy's unwavering support to the Israeli regime.
Italy, that claims to be a democratic nation, is a country where the government goes against the people's will. Profits always come first, even when a genocide is taking place. I'm teaching my kids to never give up the fight and to never accept being submitted.
The Italian Defense Minister Guido Crosetto has recently said that Rome has continued to export arms to Israel despite assurances last year that the government was blocking such sales following Tel Aviv's invasion of the Gaza Strip. Some Italian media reports recently revealed that despite the Italian government's denials, the value of arms sales to Israel more than tripled in December 2023 compared with the same month in 2022. And December last year was the peak of Israeli bombardments on the Gaza Strip.
Western governments have been systematically supporting Zionism and Israel's criminal regime, notwithstanding the protests against Israel's crimes that have been taking place across the globe. Italy's support to Tel Aviv must stop once and for all.
A solution to the onslaught in Gaza could be found if the international community stopped militarily supporting Israel. Italy, on its side, has been actively arming Israel through companies such as Leonardo and others. If we don't make sure that the Palestinians' right to self-determination is protected, and nothing will ever change.
Earlier this week, more protests and initiatives in solidarity with the besieged Palestinians were held in several Italian cities, including Milan and Naples. Max Civili, Rome.
A growing strategic partnership between Azerbaijan and Iran in the energy sector on full display. A collaboration that promises to bolster economic development and energy security beyond the borders of the two countries and in the region, as described by the Iranian Minister of Energy and his visiting Azerbaijani counterpart. A highlight of this cooperation is the near completion of hydroelectric power plants on the Aras River, a vital waterway on the Iran-Azerbaijan border, with construction progress reported at 96%. The strategic importance of these hydroelectric projects extends beyond national benefits, signaling a move towards greater energy independence and regional cooperation, including the creation of an energy bridge linking Azerbaijan, Iran, and Russia by connecting Iran and Russia's power grids through the Republic of Azerbaijan. This follows decisions made 2 weeks ago during the 17th Iran-Russia Joint Economic Commission in Tehran to boost economic relations in different fields. Managing shared water resources for energy production lays the groundwork for more mutually beneficial cooperation, which is why the presidents of both countries will be attending the inaugural ceremony.
The projects are in the final stages, promising a significant boost in Iran-Azerbaijan bilateral relations, all in line with President Ebrahim Raisi's policy to expand relations with neighboring countries. Gizum Shahmadi, Tehran.
The top annual analysis of global arms sales found that France has risen to the number two weapons exporter in the world. The gains have often been made thanks to debt from Ukraine, which has become Europe's largest arms importer. French arms sales have soared 50% in recent years and now comprise 11% of the global market. The world's leading arms dealer is still the United States, which controls a record 42% of the global weapons trade. Arms sales to Ukraine has proven to be big business, and it may explain President Emmanuel Macron's about-face on the conflict. 2 years ago, Macron warned that Russia must not be humiliated, but he's recently become one of Europe's leading anti-Russia war hawks. France's top three arms clients are India, which is the world's largest arms importer, followed by Saudi Arabia and tiny but rich Qatar. Africa is still reeling from 40 tons of illegal free arms drops France made in 2011 to support anti-Gaddafi rebels in Libya. As predicted, the weapons soon found their way to Syria, the Central African Republic, Ukraine, and elsewhere. This week, French Parliament approved a 10-year military pact with Kiev, which guarantees billions in more weapons deliveries. Russia continues to gain ground against NATO-backed Ukraine, which is an important reminder that some weapons are made to work under actual wartime conditions, and some are made mainly for sales and profit. Robin Mazaheri, Paris.
An unprecedented global movement gaining momentum. Initiated by veteran French lawyer and academic Gilles De Verre, the Army of Lawyers for Palestine now has over 200,000 lawyers of different nationalities on board and still counting, as he travels from country to country to promote his grassroots campaign.
We are witnessing a new movement in the world. The atrocities committed in Gaza are no longer only a matter that concerns Muslim countries. Far from it. Here we have a French lawyer that has started an initiative that brought together 300 lawyers from across the world in less than 10 days, and that number grew rapidly to 100,000.
And now with the MOU that we have signed at the Iran Judiciary Bar, that number will be rising to 50,000 lawyers. With Iran on board, you can also expect lawyers from Iraq, Syria, and Lebanon to join in as well.
And an optimistic Gilles de Verre, who has already filed a complaint of genocide against Israel with the International Criminal Court, demanding an arrest warrant for top Israeli politicians, including Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu.
This is going to be a tough battle, without a doubt. But in just a few months, all these lawyers have joined us. This kind of solidarity is unprecedented. We have never seen so many lawyers join hands for one purpose in history. So this is a great sign, because it won't be enough to tell a judge, look, there's no many of us. Instead, we have to be able to defend Palestine with strong legal arguments. And by the looks of things, we have a solid base for that.
His South African fellow companion shedding light on the legal aspects of the matter while explaining how the case brought to the International Court of Justice by South Africa is also paving the way.
The ICJ order specifically spoke about creating a humanitarian corridor and a humanitarian assistance to the people of Gaza. The United States and Israel were saying that the word ceasefire did not exist in the ICJ order. But this is not true, because the humanitarian aid on the ground at scale cannot be delivered without an effective and immediate ceasefire.
It is very clear that we are witnessing a birth of new age. A new movement of justice-seeking people from all over the world is emerging, and that is why while the South African government files a complaint, we see a grassroots movement also taking shape, a very unique one that has brought together lawyers who are seeking justice in the battle between good and evil.
And in the words of these legal experts, this goal is not far from reach. Lawyers believe that we live in a new era in which this new global initiative will eventually lead to justice for Palestinians. Gisum Shahmadi, Tehran.
An annual meeting of Quran reciters and memorizers with the leader of the Islamic Revolution.
Every year on the first day of the holy month Ramadan, leader of the Islamic Revolution receives top reciters of the Holy Quran to stress the importance of this very holy book in the lives of Muslims.
In the meeting, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei described the recitation of the Quran as a sacred art, while underlining that the primary objective of this very valuable skill should be to convey the meaning and message of the Quran to the public and society and create the ground for contemplation of the Holy Scripture. Elsewhere in his speech, Ayatollah Khamenei expressed his satisfaction with the abundant number of young Quran reciters in the country, viewing their increase as a blessing of the Islamic Revolution. Meanwhile, referring to the crimes committed by the Zionist regime in Gaza, the leader pointed out that the peak of resilience that is being witnessed in Gaza presently stems from a profound familiarity with and adherence to the teachings of the Quran. Before the meeting, young and experienced reciters and memorizers were very much excited to listen and take a glimpse of the leader.
I am very much excited to recite some verses of the Holy Quran in the presence of the leader. But this is a great opportunity for me to see the leader.
This is the third time I have the honor of attending such a great event. Today I am going to have supplications to recite about the holy month of Ramadan.
Other reciters were worried about the people of Gaza, who are observing the holy month of Ramadan amid the Israeli bombing and shelling campaign.
The month of Ramadan is the month of mercy and blessing. I do believe that during this month, the Zionist regime will face a big defeat.
At the end of the ceremony, the Quran reciters and memorizers held congregational prayers led by the leader of the Islamic Revolution and broke their fast together. Saman Kujuri, Tehran.
Iran, Russia, and China have conducted the main phase of a joint naval drill dubbed Maritime Security Belt 2024. After arriving at the northern part of the Indian Ocean, the vessels of the three countries practiced different operations. The joint drills took place in 17,000 square kilometers of water in a region that is an internationally crucial hub for energy and trade traffic. The first phase of the naval drills included live firing at designated surface targets in the Sea of Oman. Various vessels and fast attack crafts from the IRGC were also involved in the exercise. The vessels were armed with the state-of-the-art homegrown advanced weapons. The next phase included the Photo X exercise and offensive formations. The helicopters of the Islamic Republic of Iran Navy and the IRGC monitored the region in all stages of the exercise. Iran's Navy commander hailed the exercise as a successful endeavor to improve maritime cooperation of the contributing countries. The commander also said that Iran expects the drills to expand in the future.
This year, as we expected, regarding the types of vessels participating in the exercise,